civil priority. Isolation now in effect. To avoid the risk of contamination, please stay indoors and await further instructions.
Well, good morning, Tribe World. It's Ray here with another lockdown interview. I hope you're all doing well in these crazy, challenging, complicated times. And I'm joined by someone who's very, very special within our Tribe World fandom. So join me in welcoming a tremendous young man, Ryan Runciman. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Good. Yeah, it's interesting times, but I'm all good.
That's good. It's good to hear your voice, Ryan. And you're, as a lot of the listeners know from previous podcasts, I'm here in Australia stranded, but you're up in a place called, what, Tatahi Bay up in New Zealand still?
Yeah, so Tatahi Bay is probably about 20 minutes drive outside of Wellington on the coast there. When the weather's good, it's a great place, but we are heading towards winter, so we have had a little bit of rain and cold. So, but no, it's great. I love living here.
No, that's good. How have you been coping with all this lockdown stuff, Ryan? What have you been up to?
I've been busy, to be fair, because despite being stuck indoors, my partner, she's working full time and has managed to continue working, whereas my work's sort of been put on hold in the rugby environment until we can get back playing. So I've been busy looking after my daughter, Esther. She's around about 20 odd months, and she's pretty full on. So, but that's what you expect from a 20 month old. So I've been busy looking after her, and it's been awesome, actually. I've quite enjoyed being able to stay at home and spend time with her rather than getting up and getting out the door to work and sort of only seeing her at night and that sort of thing. So, no, I'm in a far better place than I know a lot of people are, so I've got to be thankful and grateful for that.
Oh, that's so now you're enjoying fatherhood, right?
Yeah.
Tremendously. You're very lucky to be able to spend some quality time with Esther. That's, and congratulations, by the way, that...
And yeah, thanks.
They call it the terrible twos. I remember with my kids, too, they're into everything, aren't they? And it's wonderful.
Yeah. She's, I'm not going to say fatherhood isn't challenging, because it certainly is. I think I found the first probably 3 to 6 months more challenging than it is now, but it's not always plain sailing, that's for sure, but it is pretty special.
Yes. Were you there, Brian? Did the birth go okay? Were you there? No faint?
Yeah, I was there. It was, it's the one and only time I'll probably be there. I'm not sure we're planning on having any more kids anyway, but it was, I found it difficult just because you're standing there trying to help, but there's not a lot you can do, and someone you love is in pain, and it's, but yeah, it was, it's a unique experience is how I describe it. And then once it's all done and you've got a little baby in your hand, it's pretty special. So
I remember when my when my daughter was born, and I was there as you seeing my wife in pain, and then it started to happen. I started to get all woozy and faint. So it's like you're talking about man flu. I mean, it was man birth, you know, where, I mean, my poor wife is in labor and in pain, and I started, I thought I was going to faint, and I started to stagger around like some dramatic, you know, and the doctors, my wife was, then I, the center of attention, talk about like some narcissist, you know. But no, as you say, it's interesting, really, men, the focus is always so much on, which is right, I understand, the mother carrying the baby, yeah. And the poor man, sometimes you feel left out, don't you? And, and the showers and, you know, where we go and have a pint and all that kind of stuff. But well done, Ryan. I think that's the most precious thing.
I was actually away when she was born as well. So I was away for work up in Taupo, and I got a phone call in the middle of the night, and I knew it was anytime soon sort of thing. And I got a phone call in the middle of the night, and then basically had to shoot up to, there was no flights from Taupo in the next couple of hours. So I got on a cab and got up to Rotorua and flew down, and I made it in plenty of time sort of thing. But it's definitely a stressful period leading up to it. And then you don't really think about what happens beyond the birth. So once you've got the baby, you've got the baby and you go, oh, it's done. But then that's when the real hard work starts, you know. Yeah. So it's, but no, it's awesome. I wouldn't turn it back at all.
First few months are very difficult for young parents and mothers.
It's like being jet lagged, and then you've got to go to constantly jet lagged, and you've got to go to work, and you know, end up sleeping in the middle of the day when you can, and all sorts.
The whole routine is just, it's very, very special and very precious, and I think it's really wonderful for you and your partner. And so, Ryan, we'll dovetail around a lot of your fans. Ryan was always such a beloved character, and you're one of the early cast members from season one. You were involved, call the pioneers of the tribe. And after the tribe, you had quite an interesting career change. You were at university and you studied accounting.
So I just sort of, I always worked hard at school and uni and stuff, and I sort of fell into accounting a little bit. I was doing it through uni, and then ended up sort of in the last year of uni, a whole bunch of people apply for these graduate sort of type jobs at these firms, and I got one of those. And then, so before I knew it, I was sort of working as an accountant, and I worked at KPMG, one of the firms in Wellington. And then once I'd finished there, I moved over to London and continued working there as an accountant for a few years, or I think I worked as an accountant for 12 or 13 years in total. It was a career which was rewarding, and, you know, it afforded me a certain type of lifestyle. And, you know, you managed, living in London was great because you could just jump on a plane for what was a relatively cheap airfare and shoot over to somewhere on the continent for the weekend. And, you know, I loved living in London. It was a little bit of a... it took a few real months to settle in, but I suppose at the time my sister was living there, and she sort of described it as, it's a city you've got to put a lot into to get a lot out of. But once you get used to the commute side of things, and traveling somewhere for an hour in a day is becomes nothing, it's sort of, you, there was so much going on, it was awesome. And I had a lot of friends and family and stuff there, so it was, I loved living in London.
Lovely.
But yes,
did you ever get recognized, Ryan, as a matter of interest in your accountancy days?
No, I think I probably looked relatively dramatically different from how I did on the tribe, and part of that's all the makeup and hairstyles and stuff like that. But no, I don't, not really. But people always, when people find out one way or another that I was, I don't tend to broadcast it, but that I was on something like that, that people always find it a bit of a laugh. Do a bit of a Google search these days, you find anything, and it's always come up. And
Then Ryan, you then moved over to Australia. You were in Melbourne doing accountancy again there.
So I moved to Melbourne just for a couple of years, and then sort of was continued accounting there. And I love Melbourne as well. It's a great city. It's probably a blend between the size of London and the sort of homely feel of Wellington, I suppose. It's sort of quite a middle ground in that regard. And but Melbourne was awesome. Plenty going on there again as well. And I had quite a few friends and stuff. But I just sort of at one point in time decided that I didn't want to be an accountant forever. I'd done it for a few years, and I sort of decided to take the approach of happiness over money.
That's very interesting. And was that something that, because that's a dramatic career change, Ryan, and I think a lot of the listeners will be fascinated. I mean, so many people, you know, living, and I feel for them, you know, living the 9-to-5, you know, Monday morning blues. I'm very lucky where I often say I don't feel I've ever worked a day in my life, because I've been doing what I love doing and what I enjoy doing, and I've been lucky enough to earn a living out of it. But I can't imagine. So you'd have the Monday morning blues and Friday and just think, oh my God, what am I doing? And you weren't happy.
Yeah. That's exactly it. And it was, I'd been like that for a few years. But it's always difficult when you feel like, oh, I've worked so hard at a career for such a long time to sort of throw it all away, essentially. And then you start sort of thinking, oh, what can I do that's going to afford me a similar lifestyle and these sort of things? And in the end, I sort of decided, well, I just need to do something I love. I suppose I was looking for that job that I, you know, enjoyed more than I didn't. And luckily, I had to make some significant sacrifices. I moved back to Wellington. It wasn't something I actually wanted to do at the time. I moved back to Wellington because I knew I had some contacts within rugby in New Zealand, and I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. All I knew is that I loved rugby and I wanted to get involved in that somehow. And I sort of took the approach of, well, if I can scratch a living together out of it, I will. So I moved back and hit up contacts, and I got actually quite lucky when I left Melbourne. I went to a wedding in Rarotonga, who was a good friend of mine from London. He was a Kiwi, but he was getting married in Rarotonga. And he was a professional rugby, or still is a professional rugby player. And it just so happened there was a guy at the wedding there that I met that was involved with the Hurricanes. And he said, look, when you come back to Wellington, give us a bell and we'll have a chat. And it sort of went from there, really. So,
and for our listeners, Ryan, that Ryan will be, I mean, in England, it's the equivalent of Everton or Liverpool, or in America, it's like the Jets, the New York Jets. And yeah. I mean, the Hurricanes is a big franchise, isn't it, Ryan? And what's the league called again?
Super Rugby. So that's the league that they play in, essentially, is there's five teams from New Zealand, five teams from Australia, and five teams from South Africa. Oh, is it five? There's one from Japan as well thrown in there. So, the competition is a full-on competition, and I'm lucky that I've got in there as a performance analyst is essentially my role, and I sort of look at our team, what we've done well and what we haven't, and present video to the coaches on that, and the same for the opposition, and we look at trainings and all that sort of stuff. So I've been really, I mean, I had to work hard at the start and continue to work hard, but really build my reputation within a new industry. But it's always been, I found it easy because, like you alluded to earlier, you've never felt like you've worked a day in your life, and I really feel like that with this job. So I've been very lucky to fall into a job that I love, and it changes your whole outlook and on life and your sort of enjoyment of life when you find a job that you love, because you spend so much of your life at work, and you know, you may as well try and do something you love or at least enjoy. And I made that decision. It was, in the end, it wasn't a tough decision because I was disliking what I was doing so often, but I was sort of said to myself, I'll give myself a year to try and get involved somehow. And luckily it panned out. So.
Right. And what would you like to coach eventually, Ryan, or
I mean, I'm not sure is the short answer. I think you've got to have a certain temperament to be a coach. It's sort of yes and no, I suppose, but at this stage I'm still sort of building my career as it goes here within New Zealand rugby, and because believe it or not, the New Zealand rugby community, I suppose, is quite a small one, and everyone knows everyone and all that sort of stuff. So I'm continuing to sort of move up the ranks within that. I've got a couple of contracts with New Zealand rugby doing some of the age grade stuff there. Unfortunately, a lot of that stuff's been put on hold with the COVID piece for this year, but it's, it's sort of...
I wonder what will happen with that in the future. I mean, I know that some around the world, some soccer games and what in Italy were played in empty stadiums. People watch them. I mean, up on that, Ryan? What do you think when the season comes on?
Yeah, what happened was essentially once COVID struck, we were in the middle of our season, and the season was essentially put on hold. That season has now become, I suppose, null and void. It's unlikely to pick up again. But what they are talking about, hopefully in the next month or two, is kicking off what that would be a domestic competition, so New Zealand only, with the New Zealand franchises. So there's five teams, and they'll have an internal competition. It's likely that that, or it's more than likely that that'll be played in front of no crowds. And yeah, so I think it's sort of just about fulfilling, getting some rugby back in the players, fulfilling that appetite of the community for getting some live rugby, and then sort of going from there. How 2021 season looks is a little bit unknown as well, but that's, you know, it's one of these things that I'm willing to hang in there with a job I love, just because I know that eventually it will pick up.
I think that's so. Had you always enjoyed rugby as a little boy, Ryan?
Yeah, it was always my sport that I played right throughout. I was in the front row, so I was a hooker or prop, really. So I played in there, and I was lucky that at the time when I was in the tribe, that they actually, because it was based in Lower Hutt, which was really close to my home and my school, that I was able to continue playing right throughout.
Yes.
And that was really important to me, that I was able to maintain the schoolwork and my sport stuff and rugby and all that whilst I was doing the tribe. So, it's always a sport I've loved. And, you know, even when I stopped playing sort of in my early 20s, and when I moved over to London, I played a little bit but nothing major. And it was always something I watched. All my mates were into it and stuff like that. So I never lost interest in it. It was, you know, always something that we'd do at the weekend to go and watch or whatever. So it was just about, right, let's see if I can make
inspiration then as a rugby player when you were growing up, Ryan. Did you have a rugby hero?
Yeah, I suppose I had a few over the years. I mean, you always looked up to the All Blacks, and in particular, I suppose at the time I quite like Josh Cronfeld, and this is sort of talking about my early years, but I mean, guys like Christian Cullen, and you know, they were unbelievable players, you know. So there probably wasn't one in particular, but you know, anyone that's managed to get to that highest level and continue playing, I think they deserve some admiration, yeah, because it's not an easy road.
Where, Ryan, that I became very close to a legend, really. I mean, Norm Hewitt, who was of the All Blacks, and he was the captain of the Hurricanes in his day, and a great hooker. I mean, he was amazing and a tremendous man. And through Norm, I got very close to Jonah Lomo and a lot of the All Blacks. And they are, tremendous athletes. And, I mean, it's a shame for some of the non sporting people listening to this will be saying, oh my god, these guys are bored now.
Yeah, mate, I could continue talking about this all day if you really want it, but I'm not so sure the fans would be that keen.
Glass of wine, but suffice to say, I mean, it's great. It's all about you doing what you're happy doing, and a lot of the fans will be desperately wondering, have you quit acting?
Well, I suppose the short answer is yes. I mean, I don't have an agent or anything active in that area, so it's not like I'm out looking for work or anything like that. I mean, if someone came calling, I'd always consider it, but it's been plenty of years since I've done anything like that. So
Ryan and I were, just in full disclosure, accountancy speak there, Ryan, that in disclosure, that before we recorded, I was chatting with Ryan about different things, and we were talking about the books, and we can't get too much into that for spoilers, Ryan, but I said to Ryan that if I ever phoned you and said, will you come back, I think I could maybe persuade you, you know, so we'll leave space, and so never say never, but
no, this is right, you need to say never to nothing, you don't know what's happening around the corner,
and as I say, any of the tribe fans that want to find out what happened to Ryan, that we can't give away any spoilers, but all will be revealed. And if you read the books, you'll know what it's all about. So Ryan, you before the tribe, you came into my life on the Enid Blyton Adventure series, and you were in our very first production in New Zealand in the Ship of Adventure. And you were, which I didn't realize actually, you did you attend the open audition?
No, I didn't. I remember it being on the news though. At that time, I'd done a few, I'd done quite a few commercials, and I had an agent and all that sort of stuff. So I think I ended up auditioning through the agency. But I remember it was a big deal. This English company, or this, you know, English company coming to New Zealand to make a TV show for children. It was Enid Blyton, which everyone knew. And I remember there being the open audition at Avalon and people queuing up, you know, from sort of 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever. And yeah, it was, and then it was even broadcast who sort of got the main parts. I think there was four main parts, and that was sort of featured in the newspaper and all that sort of stuff. So I remember when Cloud and I moved to New Zealand or come and did that adventure series, it was a big deal actually, and got a fair bit of media coverage. So yeah, I was involved in one of the episodes. It was the Ship of Adventure.
That's it. And and you would have been what, 10 or 12 years old, I would think.
I was definitely still at primary school, so you would have been like 10 or 11 or something like that. And I remember it was a fair bit of it was filmed at Avalon Studios, but also a fair bit of it was filmed on the Inter Islander for a few days, just going backwards and forwards.
Did you get seasick at all?
Nah, I didn't actually. Touch wood. I've never had that problem too much, but I just remember it being a bit, because there was still passengers on the boat as well, you know, like we just sort of doing little bits filming here and there. And it was,
had you shown an interest in the arts then, Ryan, in addition to your rugby side, because you used to dance, or you still dance?
Yeah, so I was, right from a young age, probably from the age of 5 or 6 or something, I always did tap dancing mainly, and I did singing competitions and speech competitions and all this sort of stuff. So I was always busy at the weekends with sort of rugby, dancing, all sorts of, you know, performing and all that sort of stuff. So it was something I did right throughout. I finished up dancing when I was about 14 or 15. I went to the nationals for tap dancing, and that was kind of as far as you go before going sort of doing shows professionally, I suppose. I'd always sort of done that sort of stuff, and I'd done a lot of commercials, TV ads from, I think I've done something, I remember my agent saying once, but by the age of 10 or something, I'd done about 20 or 30 odd commercials or something, you know. So I'd sort of, I was done a lot of performing in the arts, as you say. So
where's your parent or anybody else in the family? How did that? Or just
it sort of came about when, like, I did my first commercial when I was maybe 3 or 4, and it was due to the fact of just being a good-looking little kid. I'm not sure that happens now, but I was in that. My sister was doing some modelling. My sister's 7 years older than me, and I think she was in the agency doing something, and Libby Justice, our agent, sort of said, oh, I'll get him on the books. And I was like, I have no recollection of this. And then I must have obviously done an audition for something and got an ad, and it sort of went from there, really.
And what about the dancing, the tap dancing? Because that's quite an unusual. You're an unusual man, Ryan. I have to tell you, like a tap dancing accountant, rugby fanatic, talented actor, good-looking lad, you know.
I think that was more so the tap dancing teacher. But I grew up in Upper Hutt, and Carol Moynihan, she was based there, and maybe she was friends with my mother. They're really good friends now. Like, it's weird that my dancing teacher, Carol, that mum and her, prior to COVID, they always meet up for lunch on a Friday and a few wines and stuff. So they're really good friends. But I think I just started that from a young age, sort of 5 or 6 or something, and it just sort of continued from there. I think mum sort of pushed me into it, but sort of encouraged it, And yes. I went from there, really, yeah. So
I'd love to. I love tap dancers. You know, I grew up, for some reason, I used to love the old Fred Astaire movies and and anybody, Gene Kelly, Singing in the Rain, anybody that can tap dance. And you've got to be really fit to be able to do that, don't you? I mean, and
well, that was part of the thing that I suppose that, you know, various activities keep you disciplined and help with each other. So things like, you know, dancing and that, they'll help with your fitness and flexibility for rugby and vice versa and that sort of, so it all sort of helps. And
it's fascinating because, again, circling back to Norm Hewitt, and Norm, again, for the listeners, I mean, again, not to go back to rugby, but Norm was an All Black. He was a captain of the Maori All Blacks and the captain of the Hurricanes. And I chatted with him and kind of semi-encouraged him to get into Art Dancing with Stars, which I don't know what it's called, Strictly Ball, no, whatever
yeah,
it's called.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's around the world. And Norm was amazing, and he won it. And he used to, he really got into dancing, and he found it. I mean, Norm is really a macho, all Kiwi bloke, isn't he, Ryan? I mean,
I suppose you call him that, yeah.
Hard, but a lovely, gentle soul who had this kind of side and was around. And I said, just go for it. And he did. And he was tremendous. And he was saying about the fitness. He loved the dancing because of the fitness. It's a great way to keep fit dancing, really. And Ryan, there's a terrible joke which I must indulge myself in, where, I mean, how did a tap dancer break his leg?
I'm not sure.
He fell into the sink.
Right. That is a bad one.
That's a bad one. No, that's fascinating. So, I mean, do you still do any dancing these days or not really? Or?
Oh, maybe when I've had a few beers, but no, not really. Not particularly. I mean, my partner, Anna, she does, she teaches hip hop actually at the dance school here. So there's still a little, and Esther, my daughter, she just wakes up in the morning and sometimes a couple of first words she says is dance. Oh, we'll put some music on and she gets into it. So I suppose I'll stand around and do a bit of dancing with her, but no, nothing formal, that's for sure.
No, that's terrific. And Ryan, after Ship of Adventure, then you the tribe, and I mean, I know how it came about, but maybe a lot of your fan base within Tribe World will be intrigued. How did you get the part of Ryan?
Well, what was the show called? Jeez. So after the Ship of Adventure, obviously that was with Cloud9, your company, and then you did it wasn't Revelations, it was after.
William Shatner's A Twist in the Tale.
Oh, yes, Twist in the Tale, that's right. So I did that, and I suppose from there, you guys obviously developed the Tribe series and decided there was a part for me in it, and it just so happened that that character's name was Ryan as well. And I remember my agent sort of ringing me up out of the blue and saying, look, you've got a part in this TV series. And I was like, wow, you know, it just sort of, I hadn't heard anything prior to that until sort of my agent rang me up. So that was really good. And I remember being excited about that. I was probably about 13 or 14 at the time. And then I remember we had a meeting with yourself and Jeff with a few of the other cast members that come down to say good day, and you guys put a whole bunch of McDonald's on the table, which I was stoked about. And then sort of we went from there, and I remember having a day where we sort of came in and you'd built this mall essentially in Lower Hutt. You know, obviously it was a set, but it was a mall, and I've been quite impressed about that. It was like, wow, this is massive. So yeah, and that was sort of it. We started and had
for our kind of really core fan base there, that Ryan and Victoria Spencer obviously was in The Duelist. That was the episode of William Shatner's A Twist in the Tale, and I remember seeing you, Ryan, and Victoria Tory, and I thought, wow. I mean, I was really taken with your gifts and talents, Ryan, I have to say.
All right. Thanks.
And at the same time, we were developing the character with Harry and the writing team. And I remember thinking, hey, there's nobody better, because you had this, the character of Ryan had to be believable, to be tough and rough and a bodyguard and, you know, but also a gentleness and an innocence, really. And you kind of brought some lovely layers to that character, Ryan. And as I was saying, I mean, you're a very modest and humble young man, and too embarrassed to realize it. But Ryan, to this day, is one of the most loved characters within our tribe fandom, Ryan. And I think that's testament to your gifts in that. And did you enjoy? I mean, was it fun for you coming into this series? Yeah. Kind of weird, I guess. I mean, just like the story.
Yeah. It's a pretty unique situation being a teenager and sort of working essentially full time on a TV show and then trying to juggle your sort of what you think is your social life and your school life and your sporting life outside of that. So it was a busy time, I remember that. But it was, it was enjoyable. At times it was busy and hard, you know, especially around exam time and like preparing for that sort of stuff. There'd be some long days and that, but I suppose on the whole, it was enjoyable because there were so many other kids on it as well. So there was always sort of someone to hang out with or chat to, and we were really well looked after and all that side of things. So yeah, no, in hindsight, it was an enjoyable experience. Probably sometimes at the time I found it difficult, but on the whole, there was probably more good than bad times, that's for sure.
Now, I've got some questions here, Ryan, and from the fans. We've got the emails and messages and through Instagram and Facebook. And so I'm just going to, sadly, we won't be able to get through all of them, but I'll just random sample a couple here. So we've got one from Amanda Engelblum. Good morning, Amanda. Thank you for your question. What was your hardest scene to do? Do you remember, Ryan? Did you do anything?
I think it was always difficult when there was sort of like, because we were young and there was kissing involved or something like that, you know, like it was always quite an embarrassing sort of scene, I suppose. And I did a fair bit of that with Tori. And she was really good about it all, so it was fine in that regard. I remember there was one scene that was particularly sort of difficult, and I didn't have a huge part in it, but it was there was a scene where sort of Caleb got sort of violent with she was called Xandra. She did the blue and pink hair, and I sort of came in and broke it up, and that was kind of, because it was early on in the series, I remember that being quite difficult as well. But yeah, no, I mean, you're young and you're still sort of self-conscious and stuff like that. So there's always a little bit of difficulty around performing, I suppose, in front of people.
Yes, no, it is. I can imagine really that. I mean, it's something you don't really think of as you're, you know, kind of at that age of the kissing and sexual awakening in young adolescents. And there, us as writers, we're dreaming up these storylines. And I've got one from Anastasia Snook. Good morning, Anastasia. Hi, Ray. I would like to know, if Ryan wasn't playing Ryan, who he would have liked to have played. Also, did he take any keepsake with him when he left the show, Keep the Dream Alive? So any other character that you might have liked to play, Ryan?
I suppose I was always thankful that I didn't have a huge amount of big dialogue in certain scenes. So I wouldn't, if I was going to be someone else, it wouldn't be like a Kayla, Lex or, I forget what Dwayne's character's name was, because they always used to have big speeches. And I used to think, man, it'd be so difficult, like learning those. So it wouldn't be one of them. Probably someone like, what's his name? Ari. He was said to be a cheeky little kid, so that would have been quite fun, I suppose. I forget what his name was. Ari Boyland, I forget what his character's name was.
That's right. And Now, I've got one from Gemma Wood. Good morning, Gemma. Hi, Ray and Ryan. Ryan, you played a great character in The Tribe, and one most people would love to give a hug to. Did you prefer, you better not mention that to your partner there, Ryan. Did you prefer playing the sweet or gentle side of Ryan or the tougher side of him?
Oh, probably the tougher side, to be honest. That probably came more naturally, but it's always a bit of fun when there was like, I remember one of the best weeks I had on there was when there was, we got those stunt performers in from Xena for like a week, and it was just, it felt like it was a week of fighting scenes and stuff, and I quite liked that side of it. That was pretty enjoyable.
That's good. Well done. Now we've got one from Tom Kelly. Good morning, Tom. Actually, there's two questions. One for Ray. Any chance you can upload photos of the vineyard? Now, what I've done on that, Tom, I've asked the Tribe Facebook team to check with the vineyard and upload. We get a lot of queries for that. This is my vineyard, Ryan. A lot of the fans are aware of it and want to know more about it. So you should be able to by now, by the time this is publicized, Tom, you should have seen some photos. But excuse me, the one for you, Ryan, is were you planning or would you have liked to rejoin the Tribe in series 4 and 5 because the show was never the same again without you, Tom? So that's interesting. I remember what happened, Ryan. I guess it was schooling, was it? Or
I was in my final year at high school, and like I was in the first 15, which is the top rugby team, and I was a deputy head prefect and the like, and then sort of I think it was series 3 was starting, and in terms of trying to juggle that school life with the work on the Tribe, it was almost impossible. So I had to sort of unfortunately leave. I suppose my view on it was that my final year at school was not something I can do again. So I just wanted to get stuck into that, unfortunately, rather than the Tribe. So yeah, I had to leave. In terms of coming back for other series, it's always hard to know what things would have been like. But I was, in the same breath, I was having a really good time at university and with my mates and partying and all the stuff you do when you're at uni. So I suppose going back to do a TV series might not have been on the top of my list. But it was definitely a unique experience working on the Tribe, and not something that I regret being involved in at all.
And you also did the Revelations, Ryan, the episode Unfinished Business. It was set against rugby, and sadly with Pia, who a wonderful actor that I was talking with Tom Hearn the other day about depression, and that we were touched by that when sadly Pia had passed away, and that was a that the Revelations. Did you know Pia well, Ryan, or not?
I didn't know him massively well at that time, but I actually ended up playing rugby with him after that. Wow. We ended up at the same rugby club and playing a little bit together there. So yeah, I mean, and he obviously Pua had a good career. He was on the radio and he was in Shortland Street as well, so he had quite a high profile. So it was a really sad period, and it obviously happened when I was living back in Wellington the second time around, and because he was from Wellington and sort of part of the rugby community, you know, there was people across the board that sort of were impacted by that, which was obviously very tragic and sad. So I remember doing the Revelations with him, and he was obviously a talent, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's opportune perhaps, Ryan, to in this day and age. I mean, mental health is something that, you know, people in this situation, locked down, and we get a lot of messages from people who are anxious and frightened and uneasy and depressed. Some people alone, and we always, my wife and I, we have a charity, the Cloud9 Children's Foundation, and we work with a lot of people who do struggle, and depression is such a hard thing, and for Pierre, who just, I guess, obviously couldn't cope with this in the end for all of his successes. And it comes back to what we were saying, Ryan, for yourself. I mean, for the listeners who may not know, Pierre had everything going for him. He had a big career. He was very successful, tremendous. He had everything going. And but clearly was a troubled soul and didn't have that influence, whatever happened. But so we always say it's important to always reach out, and everybody's life is so precious, and to never be frightened to talk. And sorry, I've got I'm sitting out here. I've got a rainbow lorikeet.
I can hear, yeah.
the listeners, and I often say when I'm in post-production, we put soundtracks on, and we can turn down birds and wind and that. And, right. And my natural instinct, Ryan, is to say, turn that bird down. You know, he's but I can't do that, listeners, so I'm sorry. We'll just have to.
That's fine with me. It sounds like you're somewhere really tropical, which you are. So
I'm in a place called Sanctuary Cove, which is in Queensland, and it's like a rainforest, and we have the most amazing birds and colors, and they're tremendous. Sitting, and I have to sit here to get the right Wi-Fi, Ryan, for the connections.
Oh,
and,
right.
But Ryan, coming back to the COVID, are you an anxious person, or are you very chilled? I would think laid back, or
I think, yeah, no, I'm fine. I suppose part of the issues I had when I was not enjoying my work as an accountant was related to sort of mental health and not so much anxiety, but I suppose from the depression side of things, and that was where I sort of, part of the reason for me taking that step was to try and make a change around that. In terms of this, and it's been a successful change. So in terms of this sort of COVID side of things, I think we've been, my personal circumstances have been pretty lucky, really. My partner's still in full-time work, and I've always sort of looked at it from the perspective that we're a lot luckier than others. You know, like there's some people that have been significantly financially hit, and you know, and there's people that are perhaps living in circumstances that, you know, them going to school or going to work on a regular basis is a way to escape some unhappy home life. So I think, you know, we're very lucky in this regard, and I'm always looking at it from that positive perspective. You know, it's a really difficult time, and for some people, and it, you know, the sooner that we can sort of get back to some level of normality, it's only going to be better for a lot of people. So
yeah, no, it's a hard thing, really. And that's interesting with your own mental health, Ryan, that if you're in a job that you're very unhappy doing, I mean, you attribute a lot of your kind of your depression was associated with that career change, and changing it brought a new lease of life, probably, did it?
100%. I mean, it's just it took a wee while to realize that, but I suppose it's just when you're dreading doing a job, it can really impact on you negatively, and then you know, you're always scared to make a change around that because of this perceived benefits that come of that work or that job. So I mean, it was literally a massive change in my psyche when I did make that career change. I didn't actually notice it initially myself, but it was more people around me that sort of noticed it. So, and then when I sort of did click, I was like, well, this, you know, I am really enjoying this. It was sort of, yeah, it's kept me pretty positive and happy and healthy. And I mean, you know, not everything lasts forever, but at this point in time, I'm, you know, happy and healthy and stick to my routine and my plan and all that sort of stuff. And that's what you got to do.
I'm actually writing a screenplay for a film, which is around this kind of theme, you know. And the theme is, you know, if you live your life trying to be what others expect you to be, you'll never be free. You know, you've got to, you've got to be true to yourself. And it is, it's like, it's a lot of, we're talking about manhood. I mean, I guess single moms have the same thing as well. But, you know, when you're earning a living and paying the mortgage and that, those responsibilities and having to chase the dollar, it's a terrible thing. I mean, understandably, I mean, but you need to, as you say, spend so much time in your career. And if you can only pursue something you love doing or happy doing, rather than just to pay the bills, you'll have a more healthier life mentally, physically, spiritually. And I, like you, Ryan, I mean, I feel so sorry for, I mean, there's so much focus on the physical health. And obviously there's a lot of bereaved people. Some people have, they're lost. All the deaths, it's terrible. And people hurting and grieving. And but placing aside the physical side, the fiscal health as well. There's so many people unemployed. And Ryan and I were talking before we recorded, some businesses, and I guess this is Ryan, with your accountancy skills still there, you'll know that, you know, some businesses are really going under and struggling and unemployment, and it's just terrible. So, you know, and then, I mean, looking at this from, I mean, you've got to smile. There's always humor. I was speaking with my son this morning about, I was looking at a bee, and I had read, I got a terrible imagination, Ryan, you know, and I was looking at this bee, oh my God. Is that a murder hornet? I've heard about these murder hornets or something.
No.
It's crazy. Yeah, apparently there's some plague of murder hornets, is it, that have come out, and they're like they're crazy. I mean, they, they're like as big as matchbox boxes, and they kind of kill bees and wasps. And there's a funny thing on the internet where Dr. Evelyn Austin Powers, is saying when he realizes that the some COVID-19 restrictions are easing, he then says, release the murder hornets, you know. And but it is like these murder hornets are real, so I'm I don't know if they're in Australia, but they're certainly in other parts of the world. And it's frightening. So you drive yourself nuts if you let the imagination, if you feed the imagination with what might do. And so I think it's just better to live each day and take each day as it comes and try, as you say, have a positive outlet, isn't it, really? So, Ryan, I'll come back to a couple of other questions if I may. I've got one from Catherine Buckley. Good morning, Catherine. That's a familiar name, Catherine. Hi, Ryan. I love the relationship between Ryan and Lex. Did you and Caleb get on off camera?
Yeah, we got on off camera. I think most people within the cast tended to get on. I mean, I was probably lucky to a degree that I think I mentioned earlier that I lived, my family house was nearby, sort of 10 minutes drive from the studio, so I got to go home each evening. I think it was perhaps some of the other kids that they lived in a couple of houses together, it might have been slightly more difficult trying to make that separation between work and sort of home life. Caleb and I got on fine, and I'm not sure what he's up to these days, but he was a good man. He was from Whangarei, up in the north.
He's up in Canada, Ryan.
Right.
Living with bloody polar bears and huskies. And in fact, a lot of the listeners will have listened to his podcast. And he's, he hasn't given up on acting. He wants to still do acting, but he took some time out. And as a dad, he's got two lovely children, and is very happy. And he's doing very, very well.
Good.
I've got one from Emma Tinsley. Good morning, Emma. To Ryan, how did you prepare for the role each day?
I suppose, you know, you might be filming a series for 3 or 4 months or something, so you get into a routine, I suppose, in the evening before the day's shoots proceeding, you'd get a call sheet and look at your scenes, and I'd sort of have a quick read of each scene, learn my lines associated with that, and then if there was a particularly sort of, not difficult, not the right word, I suppose, in-depth scene, you might have the director come through, or I think we had voice coaches or something, run it through with you first to make sure you're well prepared before you got on the set. And then, once you're on the set, you do a bit of a mock rehearsal, I suppose, and make sure everyone knew where they were going and when they were saying and where they were standing. So, yeah, you'd always prepare. I mean, if you became unprepared, it would slow everything down and make the production itself run slower, which is never great. So, yeah, no, you always do a bit of preparation.
Well done. Thanks for that. Now, this is the second part from Emma to Ray. Was the character of Ryan based on anyone you know? Without taking too much time from Ryan's thing, yes, he was. He was, a lot of elements were from my late brother, bless him. So, the gentleness and my brother was very strong and big and could look out for himself, but also had a lot of Ryan's gentle qualities. And so Samantha.
It's nice to know.
Samantha Erison Garrison. I'm so pumped about this, I can't even think of a question. That's nice. Jennifer Cave, I had a crush on his character, T.E.E. So very popular, Ryan. So how does that feel years later?
It's always a bit odd, if I'm honest, because it's not with this, the success of the program sort of, I mean, it was sort of largely outside of New Zealand, so you never really experience much fandom, I suppose, in New Zealand. And it was sort of just on the, when the season was sort of going live and we were filming it, I suppose the internet itself was in its early stages as well, so there's not quite there wasn't quite the same engagement with fans that there potentially could be in a series right now. I still used to get, or even now to a degree, you get random people sort of messaging you on Facebook and saying how great you were, or your character they loved, or whatever, you know, which is, again, is a bit weird how people can sort of reach out like that and you've got no idea. But it's always nice to know, you know, something you've done has had a positive impact on someone in a small or big way. I found it a bit odd, but I quite enjoyed it. I remember the show itself was aired, it was in Australia on one of the TV networks there, and my niece and nephew, who were of age, sort of like, you know, early teens or whatever, to watch it, they watched it and started getting into it, which I found it kind of cool. That was, but in the same breath, it's a little bit weird that they're watching their Uncle Ryan from sort of 10, 15 years ago. But
that was lovely that it's now, Ryan, I've got one from our Instagram page from Campbell Lasu. Good morning, Campbell Lasu. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correct. Hello from Norway. I've been a fan ever since the show came out, and I always thought Ryan was one of the characters who were hard to treat because he was so selfless. But if the virus never had happened, what would Ryan be doing? Would he have had the desk job or something less ambitious? That's interesting.
I don't think necessarily not having a desk job has been less ambitious. I don't think, he didn't seem like the sort of bloke that would have been sat at a desk, if I'm honest. I think he probably would have been doing something physical or with his hands, or whether he was a tradie or something like that, I don't know. But I'm not sure he would have been sat at a desk.
No, that's good. Now, I've got another one from Instagram, Ryan, and I can't pronounce this name, so I'm going to, I'll have to spell it. It's from XK4R3NX. Hi, Ryan. One of the greatest things in the tribe was when you dolphin dived at the Guardian head first. Did you really do that, or was it a double? Also, your character was the best, and you deserve better! Exclamation mark. So did you do that? Do you remember that scene, Ryan?
Where I do. Oh, it was essentially the last. it was the last scene that I was on screen for anyway. And I remember we had a bloke in there who he was like the, what do they call it, the stunt coordinator, and he was sort of talking me through how to do it and make sure you when you fall. And I was always pretty gung-ho with that stuff at the time. I didn't quite mind it. So one thing I remember having to be careful of is obviously whilst it might look like there was a wall that I was heading towards, it's only a relatively flimsy bit of set. So I had to make sure that I didn't break it as I was sort of diving towards it. But yeah, I remember that. It was I always liked that sort of physical stuff. It was quite cool.
That's great. Ryan, I've got one from our Tribe TV series questions here from Sky Green. Good morning, Sky Green. I hope the sky isn't green wherever you are, if it's blue. what was the craziest experience that you had on set, whether that be in the scene or behind the scenes?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I remember we had like a paint fight or something at one point that was, and we were literally having a paint fight. I remember that being pretty cool. And I always think it was a bit weird, or it's, you know, the magic of TV, I suppose, but there would be like, say it was a party scene as such and people were dancing in the background, and then, but as the cameras rolled in action, the music would be turned right down so it didn't impact the sound and people would still be dancing without music. And I thought that was always a bit out there. But
I've got one from our Twitter page, is it? Our YouTube page. Bear with me here, Ryan. Melissa Chaplin. Good morning, Melissa. What was your favorite part of playing your character, and how did it come to be your favorite part? Do you have a favorite? Was there a favorite part of playing the character, Ryan? Either the studio, or being on location, or the fun things, or the, you've mentioned about the unease when you were a bit younger with the kissing bits, but what about your favorite part? You like the physical element of it?
Yeah, it was more when there was sort of not so much a scene where you're just backwards and forwards with dialogue, but more when there was actually some sort of physical movement to it, I suppose, and more choreography, I suppose, for lack of a better word. Those are sort of the things that I quite enjoyed.
And did you know how Jacob Tomorrow has done well? Lieutenant Luke, he's gone on to have a good career in stunts, Ryan. Were you aware of that?
No, I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah. He's, in fact, Tom Hardy's stunt double. So Jacob,
he's whose stunt double?
Tom Hardy in the Mad Max and a big...
Really?
Yeah, Jacob has done tremendously well. So he travels around the world and he's highly sought after, and is, he's actually, if you look at, if any of the listeners or yourself, Ryan, or check out Mad Max, and when you see that character on the, that weird vehicle at the front, that's our Jacob, you know? And he's done tremendously well. Let me ask a different way. If you could have chosen to be one of the top dancers in the world, say out of the movie The Greatest Showman, or a rugby player, All Black, or a Hollywood actor, which would it have been, Ryan?
Oh, All Black every day. I don't even need to think about that. That's an easy question.
And I'm always intrigued. You know, when, grew up in Canada and loved ice hockey, and then in England, obviously loved soccer, then coming and enjoyed rugby, and then coming down to New Zealand, and it's like going to Brazil in the equivalent of soccer, you know, the Brazilians.
Yeah.
And just can play soccer like nobody else. And what is it about New Zealand? Why in a small country, 5 million people, always produce the most amazing rugby players? Why is that?
I think there's a few factors that obviously pull into that, I think, but the main part behind that is the passion that people have around the game. So therefore, that passion is feeds into people wanting to play it from a young age. It feeds into us having coaches that are really passionate about being the best kind of coaches, and that coaching comes through from right a young age right through. So we identify talent quite early, we make sure they have the right sort of coaching and physical side put around them, and then by the time they get to sort of where they're playing at the, you know, potentially pro level, they've already had a really good foundation put into them. Perhaps in other countries, I don't necessarily think they have that same kind of system in place, essentially. And I think that's to a degree why we produce some of the best rugby players in the world. We don't always have the best physical athletes, but it's more around that technical, tactical stuff that gets put into people from a young age, I think, that really make sure we identify good players early and keep feeding them the right sort of stuff, I suppose.
It's interesting, just from my time with Norm Hewitt, where Norm, I remember when he was playing, and I hadn't realized how much the, like, boxers that where the mental approach is so important, isn't it? You know, I mean,
100%.
Yeah,
and that's so we have like, I get involved in some of these under-18 camps at Hurricanes level, will happen once a year. Unfortunately, this year we can't have it because of COVID, but there's a bunch of pillars that are driven out by New Zealand Rugby, and two of those, outside of the technical and tactical and physical strength and conditioning side, they're the two other main pillars are nutrition and mental skills. So it's making the players aware that these are two major parts of you developing if you want to continue to develop to be a professional athlete. And there's a lot of education that are put into guys from a young age as well around basically non-rugby side of things, because they're fully aware that whilst we give these young players some really strong coaching, etc., that the likelihood of them converting into a professional athlete or a successful professional athlete for a long period of time, the chances that are actually pretty slim. So it's important making sure that, you know, they're not putting all their eggs in the rugby basket from an early age, that they've got a well-rounded sort of approach in education. And it's just one of those things that, you know, it's right across the board. You know, any sort of skill or asset needs to be nurtured, and within rugby that's identified, and they try to help players along with that.
It's interesting, really, with all sports, really, with golf and boxing and rugby, I've been where the mental approach is so important, and possibly we all might learn something like that. I mean, I've as a writer where, I mean, filling the blank page, if I'm not mentally into it, you know, I procrastinate, I still, you know, I have to wear certain socks, I get superstitions, Ryan, and all kinds of things. And I know I was involved also, I was blessed to be involved with a boxer, Frank Bruno, who he was a great, one of the greatest heavyweights to come out of Britain, who fought Mike Tyson and sadly lost. But Frank's mental approach was very important, and I remember going up watching him train and speaking with him, and it is that fear. They all feel fear, like the SAS, really, some of these special forces going into, people think of it, it's not like the movies, you know, some of them do feel fear, but it's challenging fear into a positive, and it's very gladiatorial rugby, where, I mean, if you're not in the right frame of mind, if you think you're going to lose, you probably will.
I mean, there's a huge, but we have a mental skills coach at the Hurricanes, you know, on full-time employment, and it's massively a huge part of the game that you prepare correctly mentally. And when you've got 23 guys in the squad, they're all going to do it differently, whatever works for them. But if you're not switched on, you're not going to perform. Do you know what I mean? And a lot of that can be external pressures outside of rugby as well, and it's about making sure you've channeled them correctly so you can perform, because a lot of the guys, once they get to a pro level, they've all got the right talent and skill set and physical ability to perform, but it's about making sure you perform when you need to, you know, and that's all 100% comes down to mental skills and preparation. So it's sort of, it's a huge part of the game.
interesting life skills, I think, for everybody, you know. And you, in a way, had that, Ryan, that kind of, I mean, it's very courageous, I think, to, to realize that you want a career change and to take that decision to do something about it, and to, I mean, to take one step backwards, to take 10 forward, where you gave up a materially secure profession to chase your dream. And in a way, that's what the tribe is all about, to coin the phrase, keeping the dream alive, whatever that dream is.
It's true.
Never, ever give up. And I always say that nothing succeeds like patience and persistence. I always persist, always never, ever give up. I think that's very, very important. And well done to you, Ryan. I think it's a very inspirational chat today, and I think our listeners will love it. And it's amazing how fast the hour, we're at our hour already. You and I are going to have to continue talking rugby at the Vineyard when this all blows a glass of wine.
Of course.
As long as you teach me a couple of moves on the old tap dancing, I love it.
I'll need a few glasses of wine before that happens.
You actually, that actually, maybe I could, once I've had a couple of glasses, I think I'll be able to, I mean, that dance, but I'm probably, I'll trip over my own feet, but dancing, and I think that's, like, I love rhythms and drums and all that, it's just fantastic. Yeah. No, it's brilliant, but Ryan, is there anything you'd like to say to any of the fans as we close? I mean, because we're actually at our 20th anniversary, so
it's crazy to think the time's gone like that. It's how you get old. I've been longer away from the tribe than I was when I was, you know, like the ages I was in it. I think it's amazing that people still care about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, so that's
No, that's
fair play.
Yeah, but it's very special that they're there, and thank you, Ryan, for your very major contribution to the series and your character and your gifts and talents and touched a lot of people and the tribe, the themes that we explored, really did guide and formed to a lot of our fan base, and I've never seen anything like it. I'm always amazed at the loyalty and devotion from all the fans, and that means a lot to us.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Ryan, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks to you, Ray. It's been a great catch up. I've enjoyed it.
No, I have too, and we'll do that again on the Vineyard. To all you out in tribal, from both Ryan and I, you take good care of yourself, and through this really weird COVID-19 times, I know some countries, we in New Zealand and Australia, a bit fortunate where some restrictions are easing. I know that in other countries, like in England, it's really, really having a hard job. But, you know, keep going, and don't forget, if you need help, don't be embarrassed to pick up the phone and talk to somebody. That's very important. And keep your mental health, your physical health, and your imagination. Take it one day at a time. We're grateful, hey Ryan, for you guys being there for us for 20 years. And until the next time. And Ryan, on behalf of Tribe World, I know they'd all want me to thank you for taking the time and for being there for them. That's a pleasure, and so you take good care of yourself, Ryan, and your partner,
and your family. Pass on my wishes to everyone around there, for your family as well, Ray.
Well, thanks, Ryan, and your little girl, and I bet she's loving, as the fans, they all would have loved to have given Ryan a hug, and your little girl, I'm sure, couple hugs, and that's worth more than anything. So you enjoy your family, and You seem in a really great place, Ryan. Very comfortable. Let's get that World Cup back to New Zealand.
Yeah. That's for sure. All right, mate. Take it easy.
You take care, Ryan. All the very best. Nice to speak.
See you. See you. Bye.
Soon. All the best. Bye-bye now.